All right. Let's turn to page 48. Page 48. We've got 35 minutes. I'm going to try for the first time to stay on track here with time. Now, I said in the first session, I'm sure the smokers will be trickling in, that's okay. I said in the first hour that we talked a little bit about God, and I said that it's okay to talk about God in AA. Okay? Why is it okay to talk about God in AA? Besides the fact that it's mentioned in our book prominently. Okay? Well, on page 48, it tells us why it's okay. Okay? And this had to be pointed out to me. In that, right at the top of the page, jump down about, two, four, six, seven lines. Middle of the paragraph says, "Face with alcoholic destruction." Everybody see that? "Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this regard, in this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness." And that's why it's okay to talk about God in AA. Okay? Because God is going to, if God scares people out of Alcoholics Anonymous, guess what? See, I don't convince anybody that they're ready for God here. Okay, the only thing that convinces them, just like the only thing that could convince me that I was ready for God, was being beaten by alcoholism. Okay, and when you suffer enough from alcoholism, you will become beaten into a state of reasonableness. Okay, and it goes on to say sometimes this was a tedious process, and it was that way for me. Okay, I did not want to hear about God in here, and when I figured out that AA was some religious cult, okay, which was after about my third meeting. Okay, I said, I'm not going back to that place. Those AA people are it's a religious, a bunch of religious fanatics, you know? And I didn't want any part of it. But the time I came in the last time, okay, I had been beaten enough that I would have done anything, right? And that is why, going back to what we talked about in the first hour, you know, notice that it doesn't say lack of power was our problem. It says, lack of power, that was my dilemma. Right? What's a dilemma? See, I thought a dilemma was a bad problem. Right? But that's not what it is. A dilemma is a problem with two equally unpleasant alternatives. Right? And what are the two unpleasant alternatives? To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. Right? That was it. And the last time I came in here in 1988, which I know can be the last time that I have to. Okay? I was to the point. I was beaten to the point that I was willing to accept spiritual help, right? I was willing to accept your God thing. I was willing to work your steps. I was willing to sit through your dreary AA proceedings. I was willing to go to your boring meetings, right? And do all that stuff that I had been unwilling to do before, because alcohol was the great persuader, right? And let me tell you, you know, you couldn't have told me anything when I got here the first time. Right? The only thing that got me ready to listen was alcohol. Right? And that's true in sobriety too. And let me tell you something, we're going to talk about that this hour, but you know, you sit around these rooms and don't drink. You know what happens when you take away alcohol from a drunk? You get an undrunk alcoholic. That's what you get, right? You don't get a sober alcoholic. You get an undrunk alcoholic. And I was undrunk for a long time. Okay? And all I have to do is stop taking this action and I will become undrunk again. Okay? If I'm lucky, I'll become undrunk. If I'm unlucky, I'll drink. Okay? But I've seen people dying of alcoholism in here stone cold sober. Right? Because all they're doing is not drinking. Right? And I will go back to being restless, irritable, and discontent if I don't take some actions. All right. Page 49 in the middle of the page. Here's my little plug for religion. "We who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice even against organized religion." Boy, I didn't want to hear that when I got here. Not at all. And as I said, it took me, and some people don't ever choose to do that, but the book says, okay, that most of us favor such memberships. Okay? In religious organizations. It's going to tell us when we get to the 10th step, to be quick to see where religious people are right. Not wrong. See, I was quick to see where religious people were wrong. Right? And it's not hard to see, is it? Right? It's not hard to justify. But I had to lay aside that prejudice. Right? And I had to be quick to see where they were right. All right. Page 50. I said in the first hour that there are two types of people described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And hold on a second here. And the first type is described right here on the bottom of page 50, and this is what we call the God-driven or the God-centered individual. This is what I'm striving for, what I try to achieve on a daily basis here. And it says, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed, everybody with me, that flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, step two, to take a certain attitude towards that power, step three, and to do, not to think, to do certain simple things, steps four through nine, there has been a revolutionary change of their way of living and thinking. What do we call that? Spiritual awakening. Thank you. In the face of collapse and despair, step 1A, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened once they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Everybody circle that. Wonder how important that is. A few simple requirements, right? So there are requirements here, right? And I don't get these promises that they've just given me here, a new sense of power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction. Who here does not want that? Okay, I mean, who doesn't want that? I mean, that's what I want. And these are what I call the second step promises. We talk all about the ninth step promises and the fifth step promises and the third step promises. Okay, these are the second step promises. As soon as I become willing to believe in this power and do certain simple things, right? This stuff happens to me as soon as I become willing to do it, right? And that was true for me. I came in here and began to be willing to the process. I submitted myself to the process of the 12 steps. I said, I'm going to do it, right? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go through with it. I don't like it, but I'm going to do it, you know? And as soon as I did that, I can't say that I had a spiritual experience. I didn't start having a real spiritual experience until I got through step five. Okay? But I'll tell you this. What began to happen for me is eerie coincidences started happening. Right? I started having this sort of weird good luck all of a sudden. You know what I mean? That I couldn't explain. You know? Like, I'd been unable to get a job and all of a sudden I got a job. You know? Like, I'd been unable to find a place to live. And all of a sudden I found a place to live. Like all of a sudden people started acting nicely to me. You know what I mean? I couldn't understand it. You know, they were always jerks before. You know what I mean? But all of a sudden, and all these things started happening as soon as I became willing to submit myself to the steps. It's almost like all of you got together one night while I was sleeping and decided you were going to act nice to me. You know what I mean? And really that has been the case most of the time ever since. But you know, the odd thing is all I have to do is stop doing this, and you'll all get together and decide to act bad again. You know what I mean? So I don't even really do this for me. I do it so all of you will stay okay. You know what I mean? All right. So, it goes on to say, once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making a heavy going of life. Now listen to this. It says, leaving the drink question aside. Leaving the drink question aside. So now we're not talking about me when I'm drinking. We're talking about me sober, okay? And it says they tell why living was so unsatisfactory, right? So again, getting back to what I said in the first hour, I can't handle my drinking, but I can't handle my sobriety either, right? Because living is unsatisfactory. Because people just don't do what I want them to do they? Right? They just don't do what I want them to do. They just don't act the way I think they should act. You know, matter of fact, I came in today. I was telling Kathy before the meeting. You know, I've had a terrible day, and the reason I've had a terrible day isn't because the day was any different than yesterday. It's because the day has not fit into my plan. That's the reason, right? And I don't like it when the day doesn't go according to my plan, right? Yeah. If you take a wino, this is my experience, and you take the wine away and you don't work the steps, you know what you get? A whiner, right? And that really is true, right? And we see them in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't we? Right? We see people like that, that all they do is put the plug in the jug, right? And they don't drink, but they don't work the steps, they don't take the action, they're not sponsored, they're not working with others, right? And they will sit there and vehemently tell you that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work, don't they? Right? But don't just listen to what they say, ask them what they're doing, right? Ask them what they're doing. Because I was one of those guys for a long time, right? That did not believe Alcoholics Anonymous worked. And the reason it didn't work is because I did not work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I thought I did, but I didn't. All right. Page 51. Middle of the page. This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than in all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men of those days was equal to the best of today, yet in ancient times material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry and research and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition and tradition of all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth was preposterous. Others came near to putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. And y'all have heard the story about Columbus, I'm sure. Most of you have. See, Columbus was one of those guys that, both Columbus and Galileo actually were guys that had ideas that were contrary to what was commonly believed in their day. Okay? Columbus, in a time when most people believed the world was flat, believed that the world was round. Okay? He believed that he could get to the East Indies by sailing west, right? And he figured he'd go all the way around and get to the East Indies. And the whole goal of getting to the East Indies was they had spices and herbs and linens and things that they wanted in Europe. But in those days, they would have to go around India and land on land and then go across land for a long distance. And there were pirates and robbers and they'd get killed and all sorts of stuff. So he figured the safer bet would be to go the other way, right? And people said, "You are crazy." Right? Now, I've got to believe that Columbus was an alcoholic, okay? He had to have been, right? Because he tried to get east by sailing west, number one, right? When he got there, he didn't know where he was. When he got back, he didn't know where he'd been, and he got a woman to finance the whole trip, right? Queen of Spain financed the whole deal, right? Now, what about Galileo, okay? Galileo was an astronomer in the 1400s. In Galileo's day, they believed that the earth was the center of the universe, right? So Galileo's out there looking through his telescope one night, and guess what he discovers? He discovers that the earth is not the center of the universe. The sun is the center of our solar system, right? And boy, he is just so excited, right? He can't wait to go down and tell them the next day, right? And he gets down there and tells them, and guess what they want to do? They want to kill him, right? They weren't glad to hear it, right? You know, I wonder how many people are this prejudiced about their beliefs about God, about religion, about a lot of different spiritual things as I was when I got here. Because here's the funny thing about alcoholics, you know. You can beat me, you can mistreat me, you could treat me like crap, right? And I did to myself for a long time, right? But I'll be dying, I'll have my head in the gutter, right? And I'll still tell you that you're wrong, right? I will passionately cling to my belief even though I am dying of alcoholism, right? And some of us never get it. Some of us will die drunk believing that we're right. Because I like to be right, and I like to be right so much sometimes that I'll die believing I'm right. And we've all seen it. All right. It goes on to say in the next paragraph, we asked ourselves this: are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as the ancients were about the realm of the material? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk Had not all efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true, everybody underlined this, that the best mathematical minds had proved that man could never fly? Right? Wow. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I had a guy that I sponsored, a guy named Joe, and Joe was an aeronautic engineer. Okay? And I think he worked at Lockheed Martin or somewhere like that. And if you ever talk to an aeronautic engineer, they're really smart guys, much smarter than me. But if you ask them, they will show you on paper. Anybody here ever seen a bumblebee fly? Anybody ever seen that? See a bumblebee fly? A few of you? Well, they'll show you on paper that mathematically it is impossible for a bumblebee to fly. Because the little wing, their wings are too short to lift up that big, huge body of theirs, right? Now, fortunately, bumblebees don't know anything about aeronautical engineering. So when they want to fly, they just fly away. And what Bill's asking us here is, are not some of us just as biased about our beliefs and our prejudices? Okay. Remember, one of the conditions of sobriety that we found in the Appendix 2 on spiritual experiences, that my mind cannot be closed to all spiritual concepts. Right? Doesn't say I have to believe anything, but it says I must be open-minded to spiritual concepts. And that's all I did, you know. And I'll tell you, I struggled with it. I struggled with it for a long time. And I'm happy to report how gracious God has been to me, how gracious He has been in leading me and leading me and sanding me down and preparing me each step of the way to grow my relationship with Him. And, you know, I really believe, and we're going to talk about it when we get to page 55, that He's always ready. He's always ready to have a deeper relationship with me. And every day when I wake up, it's like, are you ready? Are you ready? Is today the day you're ready to have a better relationship with me? So one of the things I say when I pray every morning is, you know, God, show me the things that I refuse to see. You know, that's one. And help me see You in everything I do today, you know. And then when I lay down at night, I try to think about, where did I see God today? Where did I see God today, you know? And some days, I'm like right here. I'm not living in this world. I'm living in this world, you know, so I don't see God anywhere, you know what I'm saying? You know? But some days I get the opportunity to see God work in the people around me. And you know where I see it most? In Alcoholics Anonymous, right? When I see somebody like Kathy, when I first met Kathy, let me tell you what, okay? She was not reflecting God, let me tell you, okay? But now I see her and I've known hundreds of people just like Kathy, right? Hundreds of people just like her, right? That they come in here and they become willing to do some simple things and all of a sudden their life changes and they get that glow in their eyes, right? And it's a wonderful thing, right? All right, over on page 52. Page 52. Now Bill's going to begin telling us what the nature of our problem is, or the second type of person. This is what we call the self-centered or self-driven person, right? You can also put right in here, this is what untreated alcoholism looks like, okay? So if you want to know where you are today in your recovery, ask yourself, put these in the form of a question, okay? And ask yourself, how am I doing in these areas, okay? It says, second paragraph, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. God had some of that. Anybody here had some of that? Yeah. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Right? So if you're wondering how you're doing today, pose those in the form of a question. Am I having trouble with my personal relationships? Right? Can I control my emotional nature? Right? Am I still prey to misery and depression? Can I not make a living? And that doesn't just mean that you have a job, by the way. Okay? And this is a hard lesson to learn. Okay? It took me almost 20 years to learn this lesson. It means being responsible with the money that God has entrusted me. Right? And I'll tell you what, you give a drunk money, you watch him act funny. I'll tell you that right now, okay? And it takes a lot of us a long time to learn how to be responsible financially, right? My wife and I, she says she's had a spiritual money experience, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I mean, we make a decent living, and, you know yet year after year, we were like, where's all our money? You know, we don't have any money, you know? And it's like, you know what we found out? We found out that we needed to work the steps around our money, you know? That we were not being responsible stewards of what God had given us, right? And I'm only telling you that because that's my truth. And so if you're out there going, hey, that's me, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you, right? Notice that in here, there's no mention of alcohol in any of these things. Remember, leaving the drink question aside, we want to find out why living is so unsatisfactory, okay? I can have all of these symptoms of untreated alcoholism, stone cold sober. Doesn't matter how long I've been sober, right? All I've got to do is stop taking the action, right? All right. So this is a perfect example of what untreated alcoholism looks like. And my experience is that I will either treat my alcoholism through working the steps, or eventually I will return to the thing that gives me temporary relief from that state, right? All right. Page 53. Middle of the page. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis. Everybody underline that. A self-imposed crisis. Keep your finger right there and turn to page 62. Second paragraph down. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Page 103. In the funny italicized writing at the bottom of the page, after all, our problems were of our own making. Page 133. Last one. Top of the page, jump down five lines. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. You seeing a common theme here? Back on page 53. When we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be? You know, one of the questions that I often ask myself is, you know, where is my agnosticism today? You see, the book says that I have a choice to make every day. Every day I can choose that God is either everything. He's in charge of all my circumstances, the ones I like and the ones I don't like, or He is nothing, right? And where am I currently acting as if God is nothing, right? You see, because I'm a big one for, God, you handle the rest and I'll handle sex and money. You know what I mean? Right? Uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh, you all know what I'm talking about, right? So where is my current agnosticism exist in my life today, right? And I have to look at that. I have to be honest about that, right? And sometimes I have to go back and say, God, I'm sorry that I have not trusted you in this area. Because my experience is where I am self-will run riot, it ultimately leads to self-destruction, right? It ultimately, nothing good comes of it. Not for me, right? All right, over on page 55. So far we've learned that we need power. We've learned that the starting point of finding that power is believing or being willing to believe. We learned on page 25 or 29, you'll remember from 2 weeks ago, that there is a specific, clear-cut set of directions on how we're going to find that power. And now, there's just one more thing we need to know. Where are we going to find this power? Where does this power dwell? Where does this power emanate, right? And I'm telling you, I looked in meetings for a long time, and we sit around and we look everywhere for where that power is. You know, I know I did for a long time, except where I was eventually going to find it, right? Let's look at what it says here. It says, yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems, not just their alcohol problem. Again, it's all about a way of living, which answers all my problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. It says, actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Let's stop right there for a second. So not only deep down in me, deep down in every man, woman, and child. That means that God is in that guy that cut me off in traffic this morning, right? And God is in those people that I really don't like, right? And my job, I believe, one of my first sponsors told me, your job is to treat that person like their God, right? To honor the God that exists within them, right? To try to see the God that exists within them, right? Now, it's easy to see God in my kids, right? Sometimes it's hard for me to see God in some people, right? And it's going to tell me why here in a minute. The same reason it was hard for people to see the God within me. It says it may be obscured, okay, by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there, right? So God has always been there, but the book says it may be obscured. That's another word for blocked, maybe blocked off, right? By what? By calamity, trouble, circumstances in my life, right? I mean, who here hasn't had something terrible happen to them and said, if there was a God, this wouldn't have happened. God wouldn't have taken my mother. God wouldn't have let me become a damn alcoholic, right? I remember I would sit there and pray, oh, God, if you're out there anywhere, get me out of this one and I'll never do it again. You know what I mean? The old alcoholic's prayer, right? And nothing ever happened, right? And I figured that there was no God, you know? I was blocked off from God by calamity, by all this stuff that was going on in my life. By pomp, we all know what that is, don't we? By self, right? Self. Me believing that, and I believe that if either I believe in God or I am God, right? And maybe I don't believe I really truly am God, but I tell you this, for a long time I acted as if I was, right? Even though I knew there was something other than me, I was acting as if there was God. I was God. And worship of other things, right? And we worship a lot of other things, don't we? Right? We worship money. We worship sex. We worship power. We worship things that we hold very important in our life. You know, I had the sponsor, a guy from Las Vegas. Some of you may know him. His name's Bob. And Bob often talked about worship, you know. And worship's an interesting word, you know. The word worship actually means to obsessively focus my attention on something. That's what to worship something is, you know. So if you want to know what you worship, then the question you ask yourself is, what do I spend the majority of my time thinking about? If you spend the majority of your time thinking about work, guess what? That's what you worship. And the question you need to ask yourself is, is what I am worshiping worthy of my adoration? Right? Is what I am spending my time obsessively focusing on worthy of my adoration? Right? You know, one of the things I've learned is, you know, it's okay with God. You know, God is, you know, I love the story of the prodigal son. You know, the story of the prodigal son, for those of you who don't know, is the son that goes off and, you know, and perfect for alcoholics. You know, perfect for alcoholics. He goes off and his father gives him his inheritance. He goes off and, you know, lives high on the hog and drinks and gets women and all this stuff, right? And he blows all of his inheritance, right? But his father, being a loving father, he knew that was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen right from the start, right? But he let him go and do his thing, right? And the son wises up one day and he says, you know, this is terrible, you know? But I'm not deserving to call my father a father anymore. I'll go back and offer to be a servant, because his servants are in better condition than I am, right? So he goes back, and of course the father, being a loving father, doesn't expect him to be a servant. He welcomes him back, right? He's glad he's back. And I believe that God is like that with alcoholics, right? He's just waiting for us to come home, you know, just waiting for us to come home. All right. And so God doesn't care what I put between me and Him, right? It's okay with God. If you want to put your job between you and God, okay, that's okay with God, right? If you want to put money or a relationship or her or him or your kids or whatever between you and God, that's fine with them. But as Bob used to say, the problem is you've just put something between you and God, right? And my experience is when I put something between me and God, I will live in the shadow of what I have just put between me and God, right? And I'll tell you, that is a cold place to be when you've experienced God's presence in your life, right? Goes on to say, we finally saw that faith in some kind of a God was a part of our makeup. So where is God? Deep down within me, a part of my makeup. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but He was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found, that's the first 100, the great reality, capital G, capital R, deep down within us. So where does God dwell? Deep down within me, right? And deep down within every other person. And then it says, in the last analysis, it is only there that He may be found. It was so with us. In the last analysis, after I have looked everywhere else, under every rock, under every skirt, under everything, right? Eventually, you reach a place where you cannot put anything between you and you, right? There's nothing to fill that void, right? And I looked everywhere. I looked all over the place looking for where I was going to find this freedom, right? And it wasn't until I looked within me and worked these steps and developed and unblocked myself from the power within me that I was able to have that relationship with God. It goes on to say, we can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly and encourages you to search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway, which we'll come back to next week. It says, with this attitude, you cannot fail. Now, that sounds like a 100% guarantee to me. Doesn't it sound like that to you? So if I am able to sweep away my prejudice, number one, to think honestly and search diligently within myself, the book says I cannot fail, right? But I must be willing to do those three things, right? All right. Let's jump over to page 56. You know, we talk about spiritual awakenings a lot around here. We got about 5 minutes left. And they're going to give us an example of a guy. He's actually called our southern friend in the text. His name's Fritz Mayo. Fritz was one of the early members of our program. And they're just going to talk about his spiritual experience. You know, I believe that that we're all born on four planes of existence. And the 12 by 12 talks about it, actually. That we're spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. Right? That all human beings are born on those four planes. And somewhere along the line, a long time ago, long before I became an alcoholic, I believe I shut myself off and I was only living on three planes, right? I had shut myself off because maybe it was because of youth, maybe it was because of pride, maybe it was because I didn't believe in this God. Who knows what it was? But I was only living on three planes, right? And when alcohol had all but destroyed me, I became willing to work these steps, and all of a sudden, that fourth part, that fourth facet of my existence reawoke, right? I see, it wasn't dead. My spirit's been asleep. You know, we talk about spiritual awakenings. What does that mean? It means the spirit within someone coming awake, right? And I don't know how all of you wake up. Maybe some of you just like wake up like that, but I wake up kind of slow. You know what I mean? And I believe I'm still in the process of waking up. You know, I'm still in, for 20 years, I've been waking up a little bit more each day, right? And as long as I continue to do this work, the book says God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Let's read this story real quick before we leave. It says, our friend was a minister's son. He attended a church school where he became rebellious at what he thought an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities, interesting, in his immediate family, embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending physical collapse, mental and physical collapse, brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night when confined to a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose bitterly as he cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by the conviction of the presence of God. It poured over and through him with a certainty and majesty of the great tide at flood. Now listen to this. Listen to the words he used. The barriers he had built. Again, a self-imposed crisis, right? Through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with our Creator. Thus was our friend's cornerstone, from page 47, fixed in place. No later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away that night years ago. It disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. And at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink, even if he would. God had restored his sanity. And I'll close with this. You know, I was having a talk with somebody at the break who was at a meeting this week and said that there was some discussion about the obsession, right? And that there was a common thought that if you say that you have overcome the obsession to drink, that you've been restored to sanity, that somehow you're living in blue sky sobriety, right? Well, then what they're saying is that they know better than the founders of our program, okay? Because the book says that once I've had a spiritual experience, and when we get to step 10, it's going to tell me my problem has been removed. It doesn't exist. I'm neither fighting it nor am I avoiding temptation, right? And that is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Now, we've been through 5 long, arduous weeks going through the first 4 chapters of this book and the doctor's opinion. And there's a reason that I do that. I do it for the new people so that they have a good foundation in understanding step 1, what is my problem? And step 2, what is my solution? But the real work begins next week. The real work begins when we begin to get down to how to actually work the precise, specific, and clear-cut directions on working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new here and you have not worked these steps, do yourself a favor, okay? And make sure that you're here next week when we'll do the third step prayer at group level, which is how they did it in the early days of our program. All right? Thank you. Thank you. We have a nice way of closing, by the way.